Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
You know who can beat you in experience? Nathan Zagura can beat
yes,
you in experience.
Can.
This is a man who once got lost on the air in a conversation about truffles. Nathan Zagura joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. Hello, Nathan.
Good morning, Monfrere. Great to be with you. Great to be with you as well, Lima. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well. I'm not lying to you guys. Like, I was sitting there. I don't mean to put you guys, but you guys were talking about it on air. I don't care. I was sitting in the other room with Gibby.
Yeah.
And you and Bo got lost in a conversation about truffles one day in the middle of the summer a few years ago. I go, boy.
Congratulations on all your success.
There are not many people who can share this experience with these guys right now. This is something else. Nathan,
I
has
do
tasted,
like a good truffle.
You have tasted the finer things in life. You have enjoyed the finer things in life. And hopefully Sunday will be one of the finer things in the Browns season. When they take on the Green Bay Packers, you know, a lot of people have been thinking offense, offense, offense over these last several years. Now it's Micah Parsons, boy, what a hell of a trade by the Green Bay Packers. That defense looks stifling.
And in fact, it has been stifling. It's averaging, it's giving up the fewest yards per play in the entire National Football League so far this season. And I think what's really stunning about what this defense has done is when you look at who they've played. They played the Washington Commanders. They have played the Detroit Lions. Now, those were two of the best offenses in the NFL last year. They're also two of the best offenses in the NFL this year, just not when they're playing the Green Bay Packers. This was a stat that just absolutely jumped out at me. So the Lions and the Commanders in 2025, when not playing Green Bay, are averaging 36.5 points, 471.5 yards, and 7.7 yards per play. Against the Packers, 15.5 points, 238 yards, 3.7 yards per play. So these are two of the best offenses. They've shut them down. Jeff Hafley, who was formerly with the Cleveland Browns, back on that 2014 Mike Pettine staff in the secondary. He is the defensive coordinator there. They get Micah Parsons. What they've got is a great front four. They do not need to blitz much, and they don't blitz much. They play a lot of zone coverage behind it, 80% zone. And what they do is they say, we're going to put seven in coverage. We're not going to let you throw the ball over the top. They're not allowing any explosive plays. And we feel the more plays you have to run, eventually our front's going to get home. And for good reason. They've got 8 sacks in 2 games. The front alone has combined for 7.5 of those sacks. They got Pro Bowlers on both ends. They've got an excellent defensive tackle in Devontae Wyatt, who's off to a great start this season with a couple of sacks in his own right. So this is a very good defense. It is a very tough defense, and they play a brand of football that basically they play bend but don't break, and they feel like at some point they're going to break through and make a big negative play that ends your drive.
Well, that brings me to my question about what the Browns can do to alleviate some of the issues that definitely popped up the later that game went against Baltimore, where Flacco, the lack of mobility, and it seemed like receivers might have been having some issues in their routes as well. How can Kevin Stefanski deal with some of those factors in understanding who they're going up against this week?
You're going to have to run the ball. I mean, and so far that's been a problem for us. Even, you know, Quinshon Judkins, 10 carries, 61 yards, 57 of them after contact. We're still taking contact on average right at the line of scrimmage, and that's not a way to have a successful ground game. And so when teams are going to come out and they're going to play two high safeties, and the Packers play a lot of that two high look, you've got to run them out of that. You've got to get them to bring that other safety down the box. Then you have an opportunity with the middle of the field closed to at least take some shots down the field. So that's going to be critical in this game. And then it's going to be kind of, you know, patience. Joe Flacco is going to have to be patient. It's going to be a lot of short underneath stuff. And what this Packers team also does really well as they rally to the ball. They're giving up the fewest yards after the catch per reception in the NFL. So this is a tough defense. It's a tough scheme. It's going to test the patience. But if the Browns want to have success, they've got to run the ball. And it goes back to really what the formula for success all year, right, was play great defense. We can actually say check on that. It was run the football effectively. We have not been able to do that so far. And that allows you to then hit some of those shot plays off of play action. We haven't been able to do that so far. We are not going to be a good just drop back team if we are trailing. And you saw that, to your point, against the Baltimore Ravens last week. So those are the things they have to do. And then the fourth thing they have to do is they got to be at least neutral and ideally positive on special teams. And so far, we've been a huge minus on special teams in each of the first two games. The missed kicks and then the block kick. We've given a big punt returns in both games. So the Browns, until they start doing those things, and of course the fifth would obviously be take care of the football, nine straight games with two or more giveaways. Till they do those things, the Browns are not going to have a lot of success. But if they do, this is a roster with a lot of stars, and this is still the number one defense in the NFL. Number one total defense, number one running defense. You shut down Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson last week. You shut down Joe Burrow in the passing attack in week one. So you know this D is playing at a high level. We just need to give them some support in the other phases of the game.
How much more of the offense is Quinshon Judkins familiar with after 1 week?
I think he's ready to go, and I think it's just more a matter of conditioning, not knowledge. From my understanding, he has been on top of everything. Even when he was away, he stayed on top of everything, understood the playbook, understood it, and really kind of picked up right where he left off after having a tremendous early portion of the offseason, you know, through the OTAs and the mini camp. So they're very excited about him. It's going to be more about conditioning, but I would expect this. Quinshon Judkins is going to be the bell cow for this football team, and they are hoping that could be this week, and if it's not this week, it'll be the week after, and then that'll be the status quo as long as he's healthy.
I know something that Ross Tucker brought up last week, Samson really had problems picking up blitz or, you know, making sure to keep the quarterback upright. It's so early in their career, but do you feel like that could change some of the personnel groupings this week?
Well, I don't know if it'll change it. I think we saw last week, if you notice, a lot of people were kind of wondering, hey, you know, Dylan Sampson was so productive. Why did Jerome Ford play 35 snaps and why did Dylan Sampson play 17? Dylan Sampson caught eight passes in the first game. Why is he not in the two-minute drill? And I think therein lies a little bit of your answer. Now, he's a smaller guy at 5'8", 200 pounds. I'll give him credit on the one where Roquan Smith was a free runner. He stuck his nose in there. Mm-hmm. He just got run over because Roquan Smith is a bigger, stronger guy. And so for Dylan Sampson, and I think the idea is going, you know, when we get this thing exactly where they want or as they envision it, it's going to be Judkins is your one, Dylan Sampson's your two, and your third down back, because he is an excellent pass catcher. The route he ran on the touchdown from Dylan Gabriel, by the way, the ball from Dylan Gabriel was excellent too, but that was a great route. So he is a weapon. And right now, you know, he leads the rookie running backs in the NFL, believe it or not, in yards from scrimmage, which is kind of a crazy thing, but it is actually a true thing. So, yes, he's going to have to improve that pass protection, but once he does, I think he will start playing even more himself, and you'll get to that point where it really is the two rookies there, because Dylan Sampson is a talent. That's something that he's willing. That's the number one thing. You know that he's a willing blocker. We just got to get that technique. He's got to stay low and use his leverage to the best of his ability, and if he does that, he's going to end up playing more, because I think ideally you want him to be your third down back, because we can all see what a weapon he is out of the backfield.
I want to go around the league with you real quick. Well, do you have any more? But okay, I just want to make sure. I know Lima has something to finish up with here. But okay. October 19th, Browns host the Dolphins. Will Mike McDaniel be the coach of the Dolphins?
It's a great question. I thought they played pretty well last night and played pretty hard. It does seem that their offense kind of now is stuck, you know, in neutral, I would say. They can't really push the ball down the field. They have not had success doing that. And you even look at the yards for completion last night, wasn't great. But they played hard for him. And you know, Stephen Ross, I read a report saying that he doesn't want to get rid of him unless one of two things happens. Fans stop showing up or the players stop playing for him. And I thought that was a Miami team that competed last night. You know, they got, for those who are into such things, they made it closer than Las Vegas thought it was going to be. And really, it was a one-score game pretty much the whole game. So I'll give them some credit there. I just don't know. If they're, you know, coming to our game, that would be, what, week seven? If they're 0-6, yeah, there's probably going to be a change made.
Go ahead.
We have been going over the must-watch players in the NFL because I said Josh Allen is clearly one of those guys that you've got to watch if he is on TV. Ken was probably going to give some hipster answer about offensive linemen and guys in the trenches. What about you, Nathan Zagura? Who are the must-watch players in the NFL?
You know, for me, it's tough because I don't get to watch as much, you know, full games on a Sunday, obviously, because I'm in the booth or we're traveling coming back. But I think that you're right about Josh Allen. I was struck last night by even some of his incompletions. There was a ball to Dalton Kincaid in the end zone that the DB got his hand. The ball's just so on the money.
It's right
and it
there.
Looks so yep. effortless. And they made, you know, they were showing some of the changes in his mechanics. It's incredible. The work that he put in, the coaching that he received, and he's one of the most pinpoint accurate throwers, and he can do that literally to any spot on the field. He's must watch. Lamar, I still think, is must watch because of the things that he can do. I really like watching Jaden Daniels as well. And then you could get into a ton of different receivers. I like watching, I think Malik Nabers is beyond sensational. Obviously, Chase, Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson, I feel like, on the brink of getting frustrated in Minnesota, and hopefully Carson Wentz can get him the football because he could have had a lot of big plays the first 2 weeks there. But, you know, that's kind of what I like watching. And then the guys that are, you know, Myles Garrett is must watch because he's just different than everybody else. And there are some great pass rushers in the game today, but there's nobody like Miles. And so he's a very fun guy to watch. Derrick Henry, because how he's doing things that we were told you can't do. You can't be a big back and have longevity. You can't be any size running back and be getting better in your 30s. So that's I think he's a pretty fascinating guy to watch as well.
No other quarterbacks on that list.
Oh,
Nathan,
God.
Nobody that plays in the state of Florida.
Oh God.
Nobody.
You got something about Trevor Lawrence there?
Trevor Lawrence? I mean, yeah, Trevor Lawrence and Tua not having a great start. I think Baker is definitely fun to watch and certainly happy for the success he's having. I like their scheme. I like that they get in three wides and 11. They throw it. I'm a little concerned about his line at this point. It feels like every week somebody new is going on IR. But he's done a good job. If you really watch the whole body of those games, not so great, but when he needed to at the end, it was great. The fourth down where he runs out was an excellent play. And I also loved what I thought was like a vintage Baker where he got flipped over, grabs his leg. You think he's like, maybe that's it. He's done for the year. He's exploded his leg. And then he hops right back up and is 100% fine just to talk smack. And I did enjoy.
Nathan, we do have a mutual friend who did post. He's an analytics guru. He did post.
Leave TA. I know it. The most turnover-worthy plays in the NFL.
Yes. So is there regression to the mean coming, or is he living his best life this year?
I may be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure he either led the league in interceptions or was second last year. So he's going to throw some interceptions. But I think that's okay as long as you're as productive as he has been. So, yeah, he's going to put some balls in some tight spots because he's got arm arrogance and he's had the ability to do it. But so far it hasn't hurt them. I mean, the funny thing is that team in particular, you know, they're a grand total of 3 minutes away from being 0-2. But they've come through when they needed to. Younghoe Koo missed the field goal in week one. I thought Houston made a huge strategic blunder at the end of that game. And it was, I don't know if you guys thought watching it live, I totally thought they let Chubb score. Did you guys think that live?
Yeah, you know what? This was a big debate for a little bit. And this wasn't to come in and like rip on Chubb. He was struggling running the football. Clearly not his fault totally, that line. But that does now, it kind of seems like the way that they're talking on both sides is that, yes, they were allowing him to score a touchdown.
And they did a good job of it because you could see they completely parted. They knew where the run was coming, which I thought was pretty good scouting. They parted, but they ran after him enough to make him think they were trying to tackle him. And, you know, for Nick Chubb, that had to be such a cathartic touchdown anyway, because you're right, that was a brutal day before that. I think it was 11 carries for 18 yards, but was able to get in the end zone there. But all they had to do, in reality, if you went back and you thought about it, and Nick Chubb's done it with the Browns before, has been very smart getting himself down in bounds, they stop at the 11-yard line, give them an opportunity to get another first down. Tampa Bay never gets the ball back, and you're kicking a chip shot field goal, and you win the game. But that's one of those, in the moment, it's very hard, and you still had a chance defensively to stop them on that fourth down. You know, the blitzer took a little bit of a wide angle. If he comes straight at him, straight at Baker, there's nowhere to go, and they get off field and win the game. But that's one of those interesting things where I thought it was a really good job by Tampa because it looked enough. And what I was shocked by was watching it, that Buck and Aikman never even brought up the possibility of it, that they didn't even think that was possible. That was a great job by Todd Bowles and then great execution by Baker and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to go win that game. And so they're 2-0 when they could have been, you know, inside of 2 minutes in both games. They were trailing.
All right, Nathan. Thank you very much for the time. All the very best to you and yours.
Why do you sound so unhappy, Ken? What did I say?
It's not you. It's not you.
No, of course. Listen, it's. I think that there can be, you can understand what happened here. You can see that he has grown up by his, these are his own words, right? That he has grown up,
thank
that
you.
He has matured, and that he's playing great football. And that can be okay. That can be okay in all fronts. I think the thing that people are unhappy about from a Cleveland standpoint is we haven't yet solved that quarterback position. And we certainly wish that we had. And when you're in a division with Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow, although Joe Burrow looks like won't play again this season, now Aaron Rodgers, you've got to be elite at that position, and the Browns just have not been, unfortunately, for far too long. But that's kind of the whole goal of everything now, is to try to find that guy, whether it ends up being, you know, Dylan or Shador on the roster currently or somebody in a draft class coming up. The Browns are good. That's it. Until you find that, we're not going to be the team that we want to be.
Blessings. Salutations. Take care.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Nathan Zagura on the Fan Hotline.
A responsible conversation with Nathan Zagura.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
We go to the Fan Hotline. He is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. So he likes Northeast Ohio, even though he's a lifelong Green Bay Packer. Wildly entertaining. Leroy Butler is with us. Hello, Leroy. How are you?
Hey.
How's it going? Yes, I do on occasion fly into Cleveland and go up to Canton now.
It's not a bad way to, not a bad little trip when you get down there and you see somebody who looks really like you from the head up in bronze, is it?
That's a fact. That's a true fact.
What's it feel like when you look at that bust? How's that feel?
You know, that's a good question, because I really didn't know, like, how it happens. And the young man that kind of does it for us, I flew out to Utah, which I've never been. And Blair, he's the guy. So you sit there for like 6 to 7 hours, and he pulls out this whole board of pictures of you. He said, how young do you want to look? How old do you want to look? How do you want your eyebrows to look? What do you want your haircut to look like? I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. If anything, make me look like I was a rookie, not now. So and then he said, oh, it lasts 40,000 years. I'm like, how does anybody know? So it was amazing.
Yeah, if you're going to be immortalized, you might as well be immortalized at the age of 23, right, Leroy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the good thing about it is, you know, whatever era you go in, you always, you know, say to the guys, because we have a toast, just the Hall of Famers, we go in the bus room, and that's when you get the goosebumps. Because I grew up a huge Drew Pearson fan and a Cowboy fan, so seeing Drew Pearson in 21, that was a big deal.
That is really cool. Leroy Butler joining us now, lifelong Green Bay Packer. Your entire career played with one organization, and it's an organization that folks around the NFL are looking at right now and thinking, did they do it again? Is this Packer team Super Bowl caliber, Leroy? What do you think?
Well, two things. I'd say yes, and here's why. Obviously, Michael Parsons helped that, but I have to go to the quarterback. We went out and got a quarterback when we had a MVP back in 2020 going into the pandemic. And Gutekunst, our GM, is like, listen, I want to be good now and in the future. And maybe Aaron didn't necessarily like that, but it's not up to him to make the team better in the future. So you don't have to draft 17 quarterbacks like Cleveland did. We got to.
Thanks, Leroy. I appreciate that. Leroy Butler with us here, folks.
You don't need.
He's killing us. And then his alma mater is going to kill Kent State this weekend, too. Okay, keep going. Sorry, we didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. You're good. And I think, and the thing about it is, now that you brought up Florida State and Kent State, each week you can be beat by anybody. So, yes, you're riding high. You beat, of course, a trigger for me, Detroit. First right. game, come back short week. You know, you beat the Commanders, a team that went to the NFC Championship game. Okay, now you're going to read all your clippings or you're going to go up to Cleveland and take care of business when they have maybe turmoil, you know, about, you know, for whatever reason, quarterback situation, the future, whatever, but they still have Myles Garrett, okay? That guy was born with a beard, teeth. He came out drinking bourbon. He's a grown man. Some guys are like that. LeBron James is like that. Michael Jordan. But this guy is unblockable, and he's one of these guys that you really hate, though. You know why? Because he's the guy at the beach that keeps his shirt off, and your girl keeps looking over there. I'm like, honey, you're supposed to look at me. I got a dad, Bob, and I'm your husband. Yeah, but he looks like the kind of guy you should look like.
And you're right. He takes the shirt off way too often for the rest of us, doesn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. We need to trip him next time he's out in public.
I don't even want to talk. I just want to keep listening to you. Keep going.
He's a wonderful player. He really is. He's going to have to carry it, of course, because the defense is pretty good. But, you know, in this league, you got to score. Matter of fact, you have to score 30 points. That's what I tell the Packers every week. You have to score 30 points. But for the most part, defense does win championships. But you got to score in this league just in case you get a guy like Jerry Jeudy that can go off if he has opportunities. I mean, you have to understand that you can't underestimate anybody in the National Football League. And that's what separated the great teams and the good teams.
Tell me what you thought when Micah Parsons came to town then, and just kind of walk us through. I mean, people already said Packers were a team to beat, and then all of a sudden you add him, and now everyone's going, well, Super Bowl.
Guys, the last time I was this happy is when I asked my wife to marry me, and she said yes. It was euphoria. I'm dead serious. Because you got the youngest team in the league for the third year in a row. So you say to yourself, what's missing? And Micah Parsons' nickname to me is the missing piece. Mm. Have you ever had a puzzle with your grandkids or your kids and you put it together and you got that one piece missing and it's in the middle? Now, if you're missing a piece on the corner, no one will notice. But the one in the middle is that piece that was number one for us, Micah Parsons. So I want to thank the Dallas Cowboys. I appreciate them. I'm going to send them a case of Leak Vodka. This is my vodka. It'll be available in Ohio soon. Thank you. That's the only thing I can say, because he was a missing piece. Because you go to the playoffs, it seems like every year, but how can you beat Philly? How can you beat those teams in the championship game? And Micah Parsons has been the difference maker once he came through. And I was there when Reggie White got there. It was similar. When we got Reggie White, everybody elevated their game.
Leroy Butler joining us, Hall of Fame safety from the Green Bay Packers. How did you stay so healthy in your career? And when I ask that for this reason, man, guys get dinged up all the time. And we, you know, the injury list stuff is a big deal all week long, and everybody seems to be injured. You were one of those rare players, you know, like Joe Thomas here, who didn't get injured very often. Is that just dumb luck, Leroy, or how'd that happen?
That's a great question. A couple things. First, God is good. I'm going to put him to the side for just 1 second. I became a tackler, not a hitter. Mm. Hitters don't play long. You're going to hurt yourself and somebody else. Just get him on the ground. It still counts. And then I would take care of my body, wouldn't eat certain things. And yes, you have to be smart in this league. And I think more than anything, well, you got to be real fast to have like a hamstring injuries, which I was never fast, so that was a benefit to me. Sometimes it's football. It's hard to predict, but it is a difference between injured and hurt. Everybody's hurt. Injured means you're going to miss some time. And I think that's the biggest thing. The healthiest teams will be the teams in the playoffs. After that, anything can happen. So we just, matter of fact, we had two guys go on IR. One was our best slot receiver, Reed. He broke his collarbone. I mean, and he scored on that play, but we had a holding call. So it's like bittersweet. Now, had I got the score, then broke my shoulders, and it counted, okay, it doesn't hurt as bad. But knowing it didn't count, it hurts even worse. So ultimately, it's hard to predict, but if you're on defense, become a tackler, not a hitter. I don't want to see myself on no videos of like the NFL Charlie videos, a hard hit. You won't see me in any of those. If it is, it was AI, because I never did none of that.
that's a really great thought.
Hey, let me ask you one last question before we take off here. What did it mean to you to say that you only played for one team for 12 years? I look at all your accolades and, you know, as a guy that loves loyalty, I guess is probably the best way to put it. I'm curious, what did that mean for you?
That's why I love this show. Y'all always ask platinum questions. And that's what I was thinking to Miles Garrett when he said he didn't want to be there anymore or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then they make him really rich. Oh, I love it here. When you play for one franchise, sometimes it's not your fault. It really isn't. They just wake you up and you've been traded. Sometimes you say, I want to go to the darkness and get out. I get it. But for me, I always thought about the Green Bay Packers saved my life. Inner city kid. From the projects, you know, went to Florida State. I was propped to 48, wasn't eligible my freshman year. And when they drafted me in 1990, over 30 years ago, I told my mom, there's nothing to get me away from this fan base. Because we don't have an owner. We have shareholders. I restructured my contract 3 times. But you know what I said, guys, quickly? I said to myself, I want to be rich when I'm 60, not 20. So it wasn't about the money once I got 7, 8 years in, and I'm so excited when we get to all the Hall of Famers together. They say, anybody that played with one team, you get a chance to eat first. And there's only a few guys can do it. I love that. I love it.
All those years in Green Bay to get to the front of the food line. I love it, Leroy. That's great.
Yes.
I'm supposed to not like the Packers this week, and you, I can't.
Yeah, we can't now do
we're
that.
Now can we're talking to you. We can't be mad at the Packers.
Great to have you with us again, Leroy. Thank you.
Yeah, the history and tradition of these two franchises is historic. I hope people enjoy it. The dog pound, I think 85 years of celebrating that fan base. Without that fan base, there is no Browns. And without our fan base, there is no Packers. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming on.
We'll have you again.
It.
Thank you, Leroy.
Thank you.
Leroy Butler, Hall of Famer, joining us on the Fan Hotline.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Packers are basically the one organization in all of American sports that I can think of, you know, like the good sports, that is wholly owned by the town that they play in. And I've always thought that's something I wish Cleveland could have gotten into at some point, although the local politicians here probably would have run it out. Maybe they would have moved him to Baltimore anyways. But I thought it was a great question, and I love that answer from him.
I just think it's so interesting because I really do. Like, you know, we had talked about, I don't know, was it earlier in the week, like the one team that you were jealous of for the previous 30 years and wish you could have their success. And you'd said the Packers. I think I said the Patriots and the 49ers. But like part of the reason why they're on that list, Nick, is because for 30 years, they just had uninterrupted. No one's going to come in and say, no, we need to do this, we have to do this, or cave to fan pressure or anything. They had to grow quarterbacks for 3 years on end and just kind of wait in this incubation period that other teams just aren't afforded, and they really get to just kind of try things out. And you have football people running the show. It's not just owners coming in and saying, we want to do it this way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, I do think there's danger in thinking, well, it works in Green Bay, so it'd work everywhere. But The more I'm around sports, like he mentioned, you know, he felt like the Benson family were great owners. And I was like, I don't know that I would agree with that. I think they hired Sean Payton, and hiring Sean Payton and then signing Drew Brees changed the perception of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So that is like, to me, when I think Pittsburgh is a great ownership. I think Green Bay is a great ownership because of the way things are set up and the way that there's an expectation of how things are run.
So, Nick, you've been in two spots, though, in your career where you've seen what I would argue to say is when national people discuss it, they think about of the five spots that are the most problematic from an ownership standpoint. They'd say the Browns with Jimmy Haslam, and then they say the Panthers. Yeah. Like the Panthers ownership, I mean, you were firsthand witness to how that can go just completely off the rails.
It's really rough when a 80-year-old billion-dollar owner who was known for not supporting the team financially and treating it like a family business, who got run out of a football for harassing women over a 20-year period, when that guy leaves town and somehow it gets worse.
It gets worse, yeah. And some people are like, hey, the statue outside of the stadium was okay, right? Yeah. That was fine. It's not a big deal.
I heard they smelted it, by the way. I don't know if that's true, but I heard because they were like, they removed the Jerry Richardson statue and then it was to an undisclosed location. And I got,
well, they did the Paterno thing,
yes,
where they just tried to, in the middle of the night, yes, right, just take it off and pretend it never existed.
And at one point, I did see a picture of it in a building, just chilling in a building. And then like 6 months later, I had heard, and it is a rumor, so I can't confirm it, but a buddy of mine who's a PI said they smelted it and that they were reusing the material from the statue. But again, that's the guy that was problematic, and Dave Tepper came in. No, I mean, there's a part of me that wonders how many truly good ownership groups there are out there.
How many are in net positive?
Yes.
Let's put it that way. Because the cool thing about what the Packers have going is that it's obviously not a net positive any sort of way from what the ownership can do, but no one's meddling. No one's getting in the way of your vision, and you just kind of get to just do whatever you want. Like, that's got to be invaluable.
Well, and it's something that I do think Jimmy has tried to do here with...
We've seen him take steps back at certain points.
He's set up. Like, I don't think Jimmy's the same way he is now, the way he was. But, like, I was on with my buddy Bill Schmid in Milwaukee today. Mm-hmm. And they referenced Jimmy Haslam owning the Bucks. And they're like, the guy got here and we went from a championship window to Doc Rivers being the head coach of this team. And
because Jimmy likes headlines.
Yes.
Jimmy likes big time names. Like, he's attracted to that.
So there is a part of me that feels, and maybe this is fair, maybe it's unfair, there's a part of me that wonders, do we really learn our lesson, or do we finally just give a group a real chance to fail as opposed to what it was previously? And there's another part of me that's like, maybe this is like a lot of situations in the NFL, that the only way you're having success is luck, right?
I know, but I can't buy the idea that the Packers have lucked into 35 years of competent quarterback.
No, because I think they're the anomaly.
I think part of the reason why they are the anomaly, though, is because the handoff from Favre to Rodgers was, let's put you in this 3 year, you sit down, and no one at any point gets to go ahead and question if we're doing this the right way. No owner is going to get antsy about, hey, I got to sell jerseys, or I got to do this, or I got to do that. You just get to put him in this incubator and then let him mature and realize where he needs to go. And then they just copied and pasted it. That's that's all they did between Rodgers and Jordan Love.
Well, and I think the thing that they, because remember, the Packers in between Vince Lombardi and Mike Holmgren, there was about a 20-some year drought of too much of any success. And I think what, because you don't have maybe a singular person, right? Because anybody that's a team president, interchangeable. Their board of trustees, interchangeable. That if you have disruptive figures, I think they've learned through whatever time it was between Vince Lombardi to Mike Holmgren about patience. I think they've learned about disruptive figures. And although that town represents, I mean, think about it. That town represents a specific town more than any sport in America, because it's the only one they got. And without it, it's like a town of like 110 people.
Oh, yeah. If you were redoing NFL cities right now, Green Bay would never have a city. I mean,
now,
it's
maybe
just
it's
not,
Milwaukee, but still.
Yeah, but it's just not. That's not a place you put an NFL franchise.
But what's wild is what this is, and this is a through line.
It's like market 1 million.
Ownership ego is real. Dave Tepper, he didn't come up in football. He didn't earn his brass in football. But his owning a team became about his ego. And I called him out for it a lot, because it was like, you made that move out of ego. You made this move out of ego. You're too involved. You're too this. You're too that. I think the same thing can be said out of Jimmy. And I think that's what you don't have in Green Bay.
Right.
You just, there's
that's
even
the
though they all own it,
mm-hmm.
The specific ownership of it doesn't then go to the ego of the town trustees or the
well, even like Gutenkunst, I mean, he's had a chance to just kind of, and he's had missteps even in the Rodgers era. He had missteps as far as his draft was concerned, up until really the past couple of years. He hadn't really invested heavily in wide receivers in early rounds. Now he's gotten that corrected, but he's been able to make these mistakes and have the patience to understand and see the rest of it through and then find out what he needs to do. And he doesn't have anyone breathing over his neck or trying to basically get rid of his job right away.
You let business people do the business. You let football people do the football. And by the way, you still got to pick the right football guys.
For like, sure.
Has there been some luck in the head coaching department because you've had great quarterbacks that have floated head coaches? Yes.
But they really get to do their job is the point.
Yes.
And that, I think that's one of the differences. It'd be like if the NFL had 32 silent partners as owners, I just wonder how different the league would be. We don't. We have 31 mega controlling owners, it feels like, and then one situation in Green Bay. And I just don't think it's an accident for why they've been good for 35 years.
I also think there's football knowledge there. You know, like I think anyone that goes into, maybe it's civic pride, maybe it's just love of the job. I think the people who run that team on any level know football. And I'm not saying that Jimmy might not know X's and O's, but I don't know that, I don't know, because billionaires, I mean, Jimmy earned his lot with Pilot Flying J.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Tepper owned it in the banking and the financial world. And then these guys come in and they assume, well, I know this over here, so this is going to be, football is really intricate. And it's, but in football isn't just about the talent you have on the field. It is about the locker room. It is about leadership. It is about, you have to be holistically good on every front or you have to be lucky. And Jimmy Haslam hasn't been either of those things through the first 12 years. And by the way, neither was Randy Lerner.
Or you have a lot of situations like you had within the Rooneys and then the McCaskies in Chicago and what you have in Cincinnati as well, where you just have these teams that have been owned by families. And it's like the third generation of these families that are running these teams now. And they've, yes, they've been built up in football, but that doesn't make you a football person necessarily. Mm-hmm. That just makes you basically just somebody that got really, really rich as far as genetics are concerned.
But even then, there is an understanding from the Rooney family of handed down, hey, when you're ready to fire someone, wait a year. And listen, the Giants have kind of gone back on this. Let's not forget, well, you've had a Ray Handy, and you've had a, oh my gosh, who is the schmo, Ben McAdoo, and you've had Joe Judge. The most successful stretch of Giants football has been, you hired Bill Parcells and got out of his way and gave him a good talent guy to evaluate. You hired Tom Coughlin, yeah, and you hired Ernie Accorsi. Like that at the crux of it, that is that consistency, that continuity. Continuity for continuity's sake doesn't work. continuity with the right people can work for a really long time. And I think that's why if your family's owned the team for 4 years, the Bidwells seem to be the only family that has owned the team forever that doesn't get that. Every other family that has been, we're talking about more than two generations, seems to really understand, hire the right people. That's the toughest part.
Or they turn into what Chicago is right now, where it's like a mini version of secession. It's politics play after politics play, and it's just they're just taking it into the ground.
I also don't like that McCaskey doesn't have the Halas name. I know it's Virginia Halas's son. I'd prefer it's Halas.
Would you just take Halas instead?
Can they change the branding? Would he be willing to? I might like you 3% more if you. What's the Dodo's first name?
Well,
is it George?
George Halas was the initial.
Who's the McCaskey?
Well, it was Virginia McCaskey, but she actually recently died.
Yeah,
and so now we have the son of Virginia.
Yeah,
and that's McCaskey, but he's like 75 and
Eddie.
No, I think it might be Tom. I'm not sure. But he doesn't actually do anything with the team. He actually, oddly enough, he like umpires baseball games in like local communities. He's worth like $1 billion. The team is worth so much money. And he has no interest in the actual team. He umpires local like 12-year-old baseball games on the side.
Oh, we got a real problematic person.
Yeah, he's very non-involved. He just recently, in the past year after Virginia has died, has started putting himself kind of out there.
I'm going to be calling Chris Hansen on this fella.
Because it's 12-year-olds, is that why? I think he might do the high school level, too. I'm not sure.
That didn't make it much
better. It's like the suburbs of Chicago.
Range.
He's like, he like umpires in his free time. It's different.
All right, everybody, hit the showers. 216-474-0092. Is the Packers' success, or how much of the Packers' success, is based off not having an owner? I do think ego is a huge, 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 huge downfall for so many owners. Honestly. I think it's the biggest downfall of Jerry Jones when we say ego, what we really mean is the need for credit.
Well, and it's more the idea of like, even this season for the Browns, think about it. There's a reason why a lot of people think it's going to go Flacco into Gabriel into Shador. That's what Jimmy said. Jimmy said that a month ago. And so if it happens to go down that way, people won't think this is Stefanski's big grand vision. This will be like, oh yeah, Jimmy said, we're going to see both quarterbacks at some point. Now he's playing it out because Jimmy usually gets what Jimmy wants.
Is the Packers' success based off not having an owner and the QB Deadpool update coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan?
All right, speaking of heroes, he is our hero on the Cleveland Browns Radio Network. You can also see him on the Big Ten Network when you want to get ready and get hyped up for college football on Saturdays. And he is also the pride of Bedford and former Buckeye. Of course, on the Fan Hotline, he is the man that can make you smile even on the worst day when your team gave up 41 points. He's Tyvus Paul. Hi, Tyvus.
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing today?
Good. Is the sun shining where you are?
The sun is shining bright where I am. Nice little 80-degree day. You know, life's good.
Well, my friend, and it feels like the postgame show just wrapped up because I was just listening to you guys. Your thoughts on what we witnessed yesterday?
You know, it's one of those things. It's one of these moments that as Browns fans, you want to be optimistic. Even though you see all the signs in the offseason of what it's going to be and everybody's telling you what it's going to be. But yeah, you want to be optimistic. Then when you see it happening, we're getting angry because we were the optimistic ones, when actually the signs had already showed that this was what it was going to be. So I'm at that point of the realization, the epiphany, that this is it's going to be.
You've been hanging out with Phelps too much. You use a big word like epiphany. Now I feel like I'm in a Mensa class. Go ahead. Ask him the next question.
Doesn't take much, I guess, Tyvus, huh?
It doesn't. He dropped one of your lines yesterday, too. I go, man, you sound just like Jeff.
He told me.
What was the line? I can't remember.
And that's a show.
Oh, and that's a show. Yes, that's right. Sorry.
Which I stole from our buddy Chris Madden.
Ah, okay.
Hi, Chris. So, Tyvus, are we allowed to just go ahead and accept and just say and admit to everybody, this is a rebuild? Or does the defense keep that from being the case?
I mean, the defense is going to go out there and continue to try to keep that from being the case. And you know what the sick thing is? Off the yardage, like total offense, they have outscored both teams or outgained yards on both teams.
Yeah.
And that's the saddest part. Now, granted, a lot of it's in garbage time, but that is a fact. I don't know why they can't figure this out. It's like – I kind of know. I mean, your offensive line got old, which we already knew coming into the season. Joe Flacco's a statue, and guys aren't protecting long enough for the plays to develop, and he can't get out the way because he's not mobile as he once was. So that's why you see in this offense fail. The defense is going to continue to go out there and fight. They wanted to hold them under 20. I guess now they're going to have to hold them under 10 if they want to win these games.
You have more confidence that the running game can find itself or the passing game? Or neither?
I mean, I think it depends on – it just depends on the offensive line. I think that Quinshon showed you that, hey, he can get through a seam. He can break a tackle. He can get through a seam. You know, he had the explosive run at the end of the game, so that was nice to see. And the wide receivers – are getting open, they're just dropping passes, you know. So, like, it's not like it's all the way, like, terrible. Like, I can see the vision. Guys just got to make plays. Like I said, the people that on offense that you depend on to make a play, they're not making them. Like, that's the problem. Like, Cedric Tillman has dropped more passes this season than I've seen in a long time. Jerry Judy's dropping passes. The offensive line, the tackle situation where we're rotating tackles at the left tackle, which is the most pivotal spot on the offensive line. We over here rotating that, and they're getting beat. And then Jack Conklin's out, so the right tackle's getting beat. So it's like the whole thing is just, it's a mess. It's a mess. And I guess the problem is we were spoiled a couple of years ago because we was down to our third and fourth string tackles and was still making the playoffs. So, you know, you gotta be grateful for what you had at the time you had it. Mm.
Is that offensive line? I don't know. I mean, these guys are getting older, but – I mean, we had one of the best offensive line coaches in the game here. Are we seeing a result of that?
Has the offensive line looked the same since he walked out that door?
No.
Okay.
No. All right. Let me ask you this, Mr. Defensive Player. The Browns are first in the NFL in total yards allowed per game. The best, 191.5. They are third best in passing yards allowed per game, 146. They are first in rushing yards allowed per game, 45.5. Does that not frustrate you?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, I get frustrated looking at the numbers.
I don't know what you want.
What's the question there? How do you not have a mutiny in the locker room? That's really the question.
I mean, you. I'm sure they have. I'm sure they've got in that locker room, and there's been some words saying. In a minute, it's probably going to be punches thrown soon because it's very frustrating that the defense is playing this well and this offense is just not holding up the end of the bargain. Then on top of that, like, the defense, you got it minus 21 points because we threw a pick that almost went for six. That's not on the defense. Then you had a fumble recovery that went down. Like, that's not on the defense. And then you had the block punt. Like that, so like you're really messing up the defense number. Like the offense is doing so bad that they giving up points on offense that's hurting the defense. Like, so it's they got to figure something out. I don't know. I don't know if it's the play caller. I don't know if it's the personnel. They got to do something because what they're doing currently is not going to work, and they losing a lot of faith from the fan base every single Sunday they walk out there.
Tyvus Powell joining us. You hear him on the Browns Radio Network with Andy pregame, with me postgame. Do you see any kind of a fix for what's going on with the offense that can be instituted this year from what's here?
The only way that it's going to get fixed, they got to run the ball more effectively. When you think of Kevin Stefanski's offense, he's always been – that run sets up everything because now you're getting play action. And if they're not, them linebackers not respecting the run game, the play action is never going to mean anything. So to me, I think they got to figure out a way to be more effective in the run game.
How much of this are you pointing the finger at Kevin Stefanski? A lot of fans want to do that today. I'm having trouble doing that, but there are just certain things I think he can control and things he can't control. So I don't know. Are you pointing the finger at Kevin at all?
I mean, I never really pointed the finger at him before, but I'm thinking about it. I've definitely been thinking about it. I think, you know, when you just think of his message of take care of the football and I don't want turnovers and play smart and stuff like that, if that's not happening on the field, why is that? Is something's not registering. He's not getting through to these guys, you know? And then you think about the play calling. Yeah, some of it you don't have the time to do, but some of the play calling, it's not an explosive offense. Like, we're not – like, you turn on any other game and you see receivers catching deep balls, fades, posts, slot fades, things like that. We don't do none of that. I haven't seen that not one time this season when we caught a deep ball. So, like – to me, like, where is the explosive? And not even in the run game, outside of the Quinshon one run, like, we really haven't had any explosive runs. Like, we lack explosiveness in our offense, and I think that's the big problem with why teams feel the way they feel about us. Like, it's hard to dink and dunk all game, like, to just throw check downs all games. It's very hard
to find your tight end in the middle of the field, right? That's the one play that seems to work. Right? You find your anywhere from 9 to 11 yards down the field, they can find the tight end.
Yeah, well, like I said,
against a softy, right?
If I'm playing against this Browns team, like, what's the point of backpedaling? Like, they're not going deep, and it's been like that for some years, though. This isn't like this is the first time. Like, we've lacked explosiveness in our offense for quite some time.
At what point do you think about making a quarterback change? Do you think about it now? Do you have is Gabriel a better option than Flacco? Is Sanders a better option than Gabriel or Flacco?
I just don't like throwing them in there against Green Bay. I think Green Bay's defense is legit right now, and the way our offensive line is playing, I just don't want to kind of ruin their confidence. You know, I think you need a veteran experience to deal with stuff like that. So I wouldn't do it right now. I told my mark has always been the Vikings game, the London game. That's always been the mark where I felt like, all right, if they want to go to another quarterback, this would be the perfect game to do it, and I still stand on that.
Can you help me fix some things here? Help me think they're going to be competitive against Green Bay. Make them competitive for me. What are you doing?
Honestly, is whoever plays the best defense wins that game. I mean, what I need to happen in that game is, one, they down Jaden Reed, so that's a receiver down. The Matthew Golden kid from Texas got some juice to him, but the speed thing doesn't really bother me. I think that him and Jordan Love is still ironing out some wrinkles, so they not all the way clicking. He overthrew him a couple of times in his last game that they played. So I think that this is going to be a big Grant Delpit game because Tyler Kraft, the tight end, has been balling this season. And if you're going to play as much man as we play, the best matchup for that is probably a safety on him. So Grant Delpit is going to, if he's going to be the cover safety, he's got to do a really, really good job, which they paid him. They paid him. So this is why you pay guys like this. And he wants these type of assignments. He's got to do a really good job on him. And Miles and the rest of that D-line got to continue to keep hunting because on the Green Bay side, Jeff Hafley is doing some amazing things with disguise and coverage where guys don't know what they plan. And Michael Parsons and the rest of that D-line is doing a really good job of getting pressure. So, honestly, the Browns defense is going to have to come out and be ready to play for four quarters to really keep them off the board.
Tyvus Powell joining us. I asked you something yesterday on the postgame show, and you kind of touched on it a bit ago when you talked about fist fights and guys getting really mad. If you're on that defense right now, what do you do? How do you approach this?
I mean, you look at it like you can't really point the finger. Like as easy as it is in these two games to point the finger at somebody else, on defense, your job is to not let them score, no matter what the circumstances is. I don't care if they get the ball on a half-inch line. Like, you got to defend that. Every blade of grass is the motto. So his defense got to find a way, no matter how bad the offense might look, how many kicks the kicker might miss, like, you can't let that stop you. You got to embrace being out on that field and embrace trying to get three and outs and get that ball back. And then on top of that, if you see the offense struggling, there's nothing against the rules that's saying you can't force a fumble, strip the ball, or get a pick and take it to the house and put points up yourself. So, you know, that might be the next step that these guys got to do to keep these games competitive.
You talk about these fights in the locker room. Do you have a story to share with us? Or was this a Bedford, Ohio State, NFL? You got to share it? You got a story
for them? What did put them in position to get
in trouble? You don't have to put names to it. And in fact, you don't even have to tell me what level. But do you have a good locker room story?
I mean, have I seen fights in the locker room? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, like a good one.
I've seen fights in the locker room. I've seen real beef. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you the story real quick. When I was in Seattle as a rookie in 2016,
right? Cam Chancellor had got hurt, and we had this kid, we had this safety by the name of Kelsey McCray that went in for Cam. So all week in practice, we were a cover three team. So what happened is if a tight end and a wide receiver was to the same side, right? Okay. They could play. They could do what they call, instead of the safety being a buzz player, meaning he got the curl flats. Instead of him doing that, they can call a stretch call, which means the corner's gonna play man on the wide receiver. That safety's gonna play man on that tight end, right?
Okay.
So we're playing the Atlanta Falcons at the time. This is Julio Jones and Roddy White at the time. So they go into the game knowing that that's in their back pocket. So what happened is, they played it a certain way. So Kelsey and Sherm played it a certain way. I can't remember which way they played. I can't remember if they made the stretch call or not. But whatever they did, it worked. And Sherm and Kelsey said, okay, that's how we're going to play it for the rest of the day. Cool, right?
Okay.
Everybody's on the same page. They see the same look again. They don't play it the same way. Julio Jones is running, streaking down the field wide open. So Sherm is upset. He's blowing up on the sideline. And it took the entire team to hold him back because he was ready to kill Kelsey on that sideline. And the whole entire team had to stop Sherm from killing Kelsey on that sideline. I go on to say they went on the rest of that season. I don't think those dudes ever said a word to each other for the rest of the season. So it was real beef in that locker room at that point.
That's awesome. All right, great story.
Sounds like Baskin and Phelps.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on the end now, like I'm on the know, like I was on that team. Thanks for the good stuff, man. We appreciate it.
No problem.
It's fabulous.
All right, Tyvus, we'll see you next weekend. How's that sound?
Thanks, buddy.
Go Bucks and still go Browns.
There you go. Thank you, Tyvus Powell, Browns Radio Network. He's all over the place, too.
Is there such thing as a moral victory in the NFL, Tone? Because Tua Tagovailoa was asked about that yesterday. Here's what Tua had to say after the Dolphins lost last night on Thursday Night Football, which you could hear right here on 92.3 The Fan. Hit it.
Yeah, no moral victories, that's for sure. There's definitely some things that we can take away that is good, that's up to par within our standard of how we operate within the offense. Never good to lose, regardless of how a certain individual may have felt they performed. You know, this is a team sport. We win together, we lose together.
So they're getting paid. When we do moral victories, like the Browns' moral victory record is 1-1. There were no moral victories to take away. There's maybe more moral victories for the fans because I don't want fans to walk around in a bad mood all the time or in despair all the time when things aren't going well. So there might be some gold in them, their hills. And I think there are things that you can take away because you don't just get rid of players year to year to year or the entire cavalcade of players year to year to year. But you have a Dolphins team where I have a coach. I really don't know if he's going to make it here on October 19th.
That's an entertaining game, by the way, last night.
It was entertaining, but does that mean that there's a moral victory to a wide receiver that you have that, I don't know if anybody's going to trade for him. Boy, I don't know if you heard that prime broadcast of that. They got into that. Oh, God.
You're talking about Tyreek, right? Tyreek Hill?
Yes, of course.
You saw, though, playmaking still there, still look fast.
Clearly,
Still definitely look like if you're a contender and you feel like you've got the locker room that you could plop him in and take care of things, right? He still looks like he has a lot of talent. So, I know people were wondering that the first 2 weeks, but he looked excellent last night.
But I think that for somebody will probably trade for him, but I don't know what value you're going to get back because I have no idea. Like the NFL at any time could probably step in and go, well, we're going to take a look at this and we're going to, like, now there's an exempt list or something like that. Like there's a lot of weirdness to all of that right now. So, but
like I could see Shanahan going, oh, I can get Tyreek Hill. Really? Interesting.
That's a very fair point. But you have Tua, who you've paid a lot of money to. You had Mr. Cool as the head coach, who, boy, he looks, you want to talk about president's agent, he looks terrible now. And they're 0-3, and it looks like this is going to be a situation where the Browns play that. Like, I don't think Kevin Stefanski's going anywhere before the end of the year. But at the end of the year, I don't know if it's going to be a situation that you could go into 2026.
They'd have to be like 1-13. Yes. Then I could see it.
But I don't think that he's in any danger. And I don't, like, if they go out and they even get blown out on Sunday against the Packers, I don't think that he's in any danger. I don't know if Mike McDaniel's going to be here on October 19th when they play the Dolphins. And I think that you obviously feel the same way. If there's anything, like, for a fan, where does moral victory stand? Like, because if we're talking about the Browns all along this entire offseason, right, going into 2026, How many times, as of right now, do we believe it's going to come out of our mouths? Well, you got Carson Schlesinger, he's really good. And you got Mason Graham, and he's pretty good. And you start to say these things because you're looking for something that's a positive. Well, that's a moral victory. That's a moral victory. So it is a moving category of what it is. But at the end of it, what bothers me so much and what's bothered me so much is that you and I were flummoxed in 2022 where we would get these opinions of, well, the process is fine. The way they're doing it is fine. They're just not winning. It's like, yeah, that's the whole point of the game. That's the whole point of the game is to find ways to win. You're not winning. Somebody has to answer for it. Now, somebody did. It changed. But you have to win. Somebody has to do this. And it has to eventually count up there on the scoreboard. So how long do moral victories go?
And in year six. That's what we keep coming back to.
Yes.
Like, it'd be one thing
if it was in year one and it was a totally new regime.
When they tore it down to the studs, like, you're willing to get more leeway. You don't have any expectations. You are monitoring the young players to see, all right, how long is this process going to take to go from, basement to wherever we're trying to go? This one's a weird one because... Did you see the numbers came out? And I know people were trying to expose why this is such a flawed metric, but the Browns are like the oldest team in the NFL.
Yes.
Okay. And people are like, well, that doesn't count. They have Flacco. But it does count because every team's got a mixture of some young and some old and some guys that could be swaying. But the Browns have a lot of veterans.
Exactly.
They have a lot of veterans.
Especially in key positions, right? It'd be different if the kicker was 40
years old.
Yet
you're bad. Yet you're supposed to be bad. That almost never happens in the NFL. If you're going to be bad, you get rid of the veterans and you start from scratch. They're in a weird year. We labeled that. We knew that in the offseason. Whether or not they had Flacco, like, they could have had anybody else. And fine, take Flacco out of the equation. They still were going to be an old team.
I'm the king of moving goalposts, but you guys know damn well and certain that if you're going to be young, it's a little bit easier to not be as good. But if you're going to be old, you better be good. And they are the fifth oldest team in the NFL, and they ain't good. And they're in a not good situation.
It's fifth oldest? Okay.
Yes, I thought it was the fifth oldest the last time I saw it just yesterday. So maybe things have changed. I have no idea, to be honest with you. But I saw it yesterday. It was fifth oldest by the metric I saw. So if you're going to be one of the older teams in the NFL, and yes, I know that we're talking about 22 to 25-year-olds in a lot of cases. Like, yes, it's still relatively young. But if you're going to be an old team, you better be good. And they're bad. They're bad right now. And I can't take away when you have a franchise defensive end, a franchise cornerback. You do have a 40-year-old quarterback that I know that he's there as a bridge, so I take him aside. But I have an offensive line that right now their future is all up in the air. All up in the air. I mean, you might have to sign. I think that a lot of people would like to get younger on the offensive line. Zach Zinter's not ready. He was a healthy scratch. So you might have to sign Wyatt Teller to a contract just to have some stability on the offensive line when you go and get a guy in the draft for this coming year. And now, and I'll tell you this, there's more understanding than ever. Like I mentioned, I know you brought up Jaden Daniels, like, there's going to be a little bit of a sophomore pushback. We mentioned C.J. Stroud. There's definitely been a little bit of a regression to the mean there because other guys have to play good around him. I think there's more understanding than there was 8, 7, 6 years ago even from getting new quarterbacks and immediately taking off. I think there's more understanding there. But damn, if you're going to be in year 6, and I look at the Dolphins, if you're going to be, well, how many years has Mike McDaniel been there? 4? If you're going to be in year 4 or 5, like, it's time to go.
I do think there is a difference.
It's time to go.
This week,
it can't be dealt with.
I do think there's a difference this week. I mean, call it moral victory, call it whatever you want. There is a huge difference this week in just getting blown out and looking like you have no business being on the same football field by the time it gets into the fourth quarter as the Packers. And, hey, Judkins, Samson, Fannin play really well.
That's great.
It's you keep it to within 7 to 10 points, and it's a ball game, in the fourth. I do think there's a major difference between that and just getting blown out.
I think you say that right now, and I think that means something for those players, but what's Kevin Stefanski's overall record?
Oh, yeah, I'm not. Again, how I feel about, the losses piling up and the organization.
Exactly.
But I'm talking about fans would be able to leave the stadium saying, if we just had the right coach. Like, that's what you'd be able to do.
But when you hear about the understanding,
the right quarterback
of things,
and the right coach.
When you hear about the understanding of things, I think it makes you want to pull out your hair. Because it's still, while you're six. And if I go, yeah, I got Fanning. Yeah, I got Schlesinger. Yeah, I got so-and-so. Where were all these guys? Okay, why am I not saying guys from 3 years ago? Why am I not saying guys from 2 years ago or 4 years ago here when this regime has been in charge for 6 years? Like, that's why I keep saying it, it may very well be too little too late for Andrew Berry.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.